Back and looking at the burden of Habakkuk again this afternoon. Actually, this entire book deals with the burden of Habakkuk. We're going to look at the main part of that burden, or at least the beginning of that burden, is his concern over the wickedness of the unbelief. We're going to be looking at some of the things that concern this burden of Habakkuk. But this drought is not good, is it? I think we're getting just a little taste of you know, what it could be if God withheld His mercy and grace. I got to thinking about this because I've been hearing a lot about it. In fact, I was talking to my neighbor up at Conroe the other day. I guess it was Thursday or maybe Friday, I forgot. One day I ran into him. He's he operates a business next to us up there, and we got to talking. Of course, every time you meet somebody nowadays, what's the first thing they start talking about? It's hot and dry. We need rain. It's just well, I really think it's past worrying about their lawns. I don't think people are worrying about their lawns anymore. I think they're really beginning to get serious. I don't think it's causing them really to get serious with God, but they are understanding. They're beginning to understand that, you know, this things like water and rain and that type of stuff, it's not a foregone conclusion that we're going to just have plenty of it. But I got talking to Jerry the other day, and he made the remark, and I got thinking about it later. I really ought to ask him where he got that information, but he was saying that he had heard that they were predicting that as much as 25% of the world's population could die from starvation. That's a lot of people, and I don't know whether to believe that or not, but I did yesterday. Had a few minutes, and so I started looking up some of the statistics and things on this drought or famine or and stuff that was going on. And one thing I noted in that just in Africa alone, and mainly in the Horn of Africa, they're estimating that there are some 12 million people that are vulnerable right now. And we're talking about the ponds drying up. That's what they're saying, that the ponds are dried up there, the lakes are dry, the rivers are dry, and there's no vegetation for animals to eat and no water for them to drink. All their animals are dead, are dying, and all of the people from the villages and the countryside are gravitating. They're coming in droves every day into these relief camps, these refugee camps that are set up over there. And they're trying to build or get more of them operating all the time, and they can't keep up with it. And people are dying by the droves, and they're burying them outside of those camps. If you read what's going on, it's it's a little bit, gives you a little bit of concern that it's not just in Africa. It's in South America and Asia. And guess where else? Right here in Texas. Yeah. It's really beginning to get close to home. Now, does this mean there haven't been droughts before and famines before? Yeah, no. They've been there, haven't they? They've been there from as far back as we read in the Bible. That's the reason Joseph moved Jacob and his brothers and stuff back down to Egypt. That's how they wound up in Egypt in the land of Goshen. But to say the very least, it is a very dangerous time. Now, what makes it more dangerous than anything is that it's not just from natural phenomena. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that much of it, as if you can believe what you read, much of it is because of man-made problems that has to do mainly with economics. Now, this kind of shocked me, because all you ever hear about, you see, is just the drought itself and the famine itself. And, you know, you naturally think, well, the reason these people are starving is just because, you know, they don't have any food. There's no rain and everything. But the truth of the matter is, again, if you can believe what you read, that it's a very great portion of it is because of economics. And those economics are what is driving the economics is greed for money. Especially from these big grain consortiums. One thing is that just like with the oil and gas situation, they're driving the price of grain up artificially. And I'm reading too that, they're supposedly sending seed, for instance, and all these, they're doing all of these things to help these indigenous farmers in these poor countries to better themselves, but the only problem is that in trying to better them, they actually make their situation worse because it's driving out all of the individual farmers and it's bringing in those that are money hungry. In other words, the communities, it's not a community situation anymore. Another thing that they're pointing out is that organizations like the United Nations and others like that are pouring grain into these countries, and it's depressing the price. It depresses the price of commodities or that grain that those little farmers are raising out there to where they actually go out of business. They can't survive. Now, we've seen a lot of that in this nation. How many little farmers are there today? Not many. It hadn't been but just a few years ago until this whole country was dairy farming and truck farming, vegetables, raising vegetables and selling dairy products. I cannot think of one dairy in the whole area anymore. I don't know. Maybe there is one somewhere, but I don't know where it is. There is. Maybe so. I don't know, but they may be, you know, but my point is they used to be everywhere. And truck farms, there are a few truck farms, but most of them are gone. They're through. The older people, when the older people get too old, the younger people don't want it. Why? There's no money in it. But then what happens? It increases the price of the commodities. It don't get less, it gets more. And there's just, if you read these things, what I'm pointing out or trying to point out is that these famines are caused from more than just the natural phenomena. It's the greed of mankind, and it's the greed of these big conglomerates, and they are not only driving the price of food up, but they're driving the farmers out of business. And I can't fully explain all of it, but I guess my point is this, that if it were just a natural phenomena, it wouldn't be nearly as bad as it is. But God, you see, is allowing this to happen as part of the judgment of this world. Now, again, we in this country, at least all of us sitting here or in this place or gathered here, I mean, what do we know about this? I'm talking about a famine. Have any of us ever been through one? We don't know what it is, do we? Some of our, well, I guess nearly all of our parents went through that Great Depression, and probably some knew something about that Dust Bowl in Texas and Oklahoma. But basically speaking, this nation has been spared from all of that. But does that mean that it's going to continue to be so? You say, well, now what does all of that have to do with our study in the book of Habakkuk? Well, if you go over and read that last chapter there, especially verse 17, the question is, in the judgment of God, is he a respecter of persons, or is he a respecter of nations? And the answer to that, of course, is no. Now, if you study not just the book of Habakkuk, but if you study the history of the nations, you do find out that one of the surest judgments of God against ungodliness has always been this thing of famine. when I was reading all of this and thinking about it, I thought about the opening of the seals in the book of Revelation. Brother Jerry was turning over there a while ago, pointing to that book. But I was thinking about that, and again, we may have differences of understanding about some of these things, but nevertheless, when they opened the third seal, or the third seal was opened, he says, "I heard the third beast say, 'Come and see,' and I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on had a pair of balances in his hand, and I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, 'A measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny, and see thou hurt not the oil and the wine.'" Now, again, different commentators have different understandings of this, but at least some of the commentators understand that to mean pointing to conditions of famine. Now, again, personally, I believe that these Old Testament prophecies certainly carry over into New Testament times. I don't believe they're just for the Old Testament people. I don't believe they're just for the people of Israel, national Israel. But I do believe that they carry over to New Testament times. And I believe that there is much for us to consider in this book of Habakkuk, because, again, the burden of Habakkuk is found in the first four verses of this book. And what is that burden? Again, we'll say it. His burden is the wickedness. It is the unbelief. It's the iniquity of the people that are called the people of God. Now, let me say it one more time, that this doesn't include all the people. I'm talking about not everyone of Israel was wicked. I don't believe Habakkuk fell into that category, for instance. We know that they were not. We know that there was Daniel. We know that there was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We know there was Ezekiel, and there were others. There were, in fact, quite a few others that were faithful to God and faithful to His worship. But nevertheless, they went through this judgment just like the rest of them, with one exception. What is that? That they had the strength, the power of God with them. It is foolishness for us to think that God is going to judge a nation and it's not going to affect His people. We are not told that that is so. In fact, it is implied that we ought to get ourselves ready because that we will experience many of the hardships of that judgment. As we'll see later in a moment or two, the good thing is that judgment for God's true people has a purpose. And that purpose is the salvation of His people. But does that make it easy? No. It doesn't make it easy. But it does make it good. But all right. the burden then of Habakkuk is the wickedness and the unbelief, the iniquity of the people that are called the people of God in general. Now, what's the parallel to that? Well, here we have all of this religion today, right? There's no shortage of even Christian, quote-unquote, religion. Yes, there's religion all over the world. People are just naturally religious. But I'm talking about that's called the Church of God today. Where does it stand? The truth of the matter is that our burden, and we ought to have a burden, ought to be the same as Habakkuk's. His burden concerned the wickedness. But then God has an answer, doesn't He? But what is that answer? His judgment. And what is the effects of that judgment? What are the effects of that judgment? Well, it's terrible. It's horrible. There is a reason why the psalmist tells us and warns people to kiss the sun, lest his anger be kindled. But how much? Just a little. But for God's people, again, it's for correction. But for the unbelievers, it is destruction. So we have this burden of Habakkuk, but what about then the effects of this burden? We have a burden for people. We have a burden for the truth of God's Word. We have a burden, just like Habakkuk, for the iniquity. We speak about it all the time. It's forever on our hearts and minds. We deplore the condition of what is called the church today. And we wonder, just like Habakkuk, Lord, how long? What are you going to do about this? But God's answer, the effects of Habakkuk's burden, I don't think was quite what he was expecting. And I don't think it's quite what we have been expecting. There's been quite a bit said lately. The 12th chapter of Jeremiah has come, has created quite a bit of interest lately, especially verses 5 and 6 of that chapter. Of course, in the first part, in the first four verses, Jeremiah is complaining very much like Habakkuk is complaining. What does he say? Wherefore doth the way of the wicked prosper? Wherefore are all they happy that deal treacherously? Thou hast planted them, yea, they have taken root. They grow, yea, they bring forth fruit. Thou art near in their mouth and far from their reins. And Jeremiah has this complaint. And it's a legitimate complaint. But here's the answer that the Lord gives. You see, I can just put myself in Jeremiah's place. I can put myself in Habakkuk's place. And you know what I would expect? Just like today, You know what we would like to expect anyway? That we can just go out and preach the Word and it's going to change everything. Am I right? Isn't that what we'd like to see? Isn't that the effect that we would like our burden to have? But is it happening? It's not. But here's what God says to Jeremiah, verse 5. If thou hast run with the footmen, and they have wearied thee, how canst thou contend with horses? And if in the land of peace, note this, this is the part of it that I really start to think about these days. If in the land of peace, wherein thou trustest, they wearied thee, then how wilt thou do in the swelling of the Jordan? Now, what is the swelling of the Jordan? What does that refer to, sir?
Death and not present.
Yeah, death. That's the Chaldeans coming in and doing just exactly what Habakkuk is talking about over here in this first chapter. Devastating the land. Killing, murdering, torturing, and the people, and destroying the crops, making the land desolate. In other words, what God is telling Jeremiah is, if you think this is bad, you haven't seen anything yet. Prepare. Prepare yourself. I don't think that's what Jeremiah expected. And when the Lord said to Habakkuk, behold ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. I don't think that's what Habakkuk was expecting. Maybe a little. You know, problem. But not what he's setting forth here. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. You know, this nation really has only known one war. I'm talking about one real war. There have been some battles, all right enough. But since this nation was brought forth, of course it was brought forth in war, wasn't it? But since then, we've had what was called the Civil War. I don't know how that got that name, really. Except that it was between the two civilities, the North and the South, supposedly. But there wasn't anything civil about it, was it? But one thing, we've never, ever have been invaded until now. But guess what's happening? We are being invaded. A Have you ever thought how insane it is that we do not secure the borders of this nation? How smart do you have to be to understand that if we don't secure the borders of this nation, we're going to lose it? Why are they fighting that tooth and toenail? And how in the world is it happening? When 70 or 75% of the people want the borders secured. Well, let me tell you, it's just one more indication that you can't fight against God. If He doesn't want these borders secured, you know what's going to happen? They're not going to be secured. But folks, whether we understand it or not, we are being invaded. Now they estimate, but some think it's a very conservative estimate, that there's some 12 to 16 million aliens from south of the border in this nation today. And some place that closer to 19 or 20 million. Now, that's just the ones that are here lately. That's not the ones that have already come in, and it's not those that they granted amnesty to already a few years back. And that's just the Latinos. And who knows how many others that are in this nation that have come in here. For instance, how many of you ever go into a convenience store? Jim, how many of them have American people running them? Not many. What about the construction industry, Jim? How many good old redneck boys you got now out there from working for you? Yeah. Well, where are all these people coming from? And let me tell you something. There's a whole bunch of them out there that are called Muslims. How many of you have noticed how many of these mosques are going up? How many of you really believe that those people love this nation? Sir, it is the spirit of delusion. But you know what? They're putting up signs all over the place telling you how much they love you. But I guarantee you, they are loyal to their religion. What's going to happen exactly, I don't know. But I do know this, we are under attack. And if they get the chance, they will take it. Get all other kinds of help. And who's paying for it?
They say money to come and have food here or something.
Well, who's paying for that? Several years back, I bought a book. It was called, the name of it, the title of it, was The Dispossessed Majority. And folks, that's exactly what has taken place and is taking place today. And the majority, which is you and me, we have been so brainwashed and or browbeat until nobody dares to say anything against all of this stuff. And our politicians sure didn't do it. Hardly any of them got enough backbone to do anything. But my point is this. Again, that we have a burden for the truth of God's Word, but we better be ready for God's answer to be not quite what we expect it to be unless we read and apply the Word of God like it's written to Habakkuk, to where we do understand and we do expect the judgment of God. Now, again, the good part of it is, as we pointed out over and over again, the judgment of God against all unrighteousness always results in the salvation of God's own people. But what is salvation? You see, I'm afraid this is where we miss the point. You know what salvation is? It's over here in this 17th, 18th, and 19th verses of the third chapter of Habakkuk. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Is that salvation? That is. It is in this sense. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord, I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and He will make my feet like hinds' feet. He will make me to walk upon mine high places. But you get the picture here that salvation of God's people is not the fig tree blossoming and fruit being in the vines and the labor of the olive not failing, and the fields yielding meat, and the flock not being cut off from the fold, and a herd being in the stalls. The, you understand that that's what the church in general is preaching and teaching today. It's called health and wealth gospel. And folks, in case you hadn't figured it out, it's been going on a long time. Since before I was born. And that's been over 70 years ago. I was talking the other day, and there's another book that I picked up free of charge over in San Antonio back in about 1979. I was on jury duty, and they were letting us out, of course, at noon. We had about 2 hours to do nothing. It could take about 15 minutes to eat. So I was walking around the streets of downtown San Antonio there, and I come across this bookstore, and they had out on the sidewalk just a whole raft of books out there free of charge. I got just thumbing around through some of them, and I found this book. I forgot the guy's name, and I gave the book to Brother John Paul Johnson. I never have gotten it back, but I've forgotten that guy's name that wrote the book. But the title of the book was The New Look of Religion in America, or The New Shape, I believe. It's New Shape of Religion in America. And you know what that guy was saying? And by the way, this was written back in the early 1930s. You know what that guy was saying? He was painting a picture of exactly what we're seeing now. Non-denominationalism, he was calling it community churches. And the gospel that he was espousing and saying that they would be preaching is exactly this socialism that is being espoused by the vast majority of the churches today. I mean, I read that book and I just was amazed at how close he had come to the truth. But what is salvation? It is to rejoice in God. What if, for instance, what if now you had nothing, absolutely nothing to rejoice in but God Himself? Well, not really. But isn't that what we rejoice in to a great degree? The fig tree and the olive and the herd in the stall and the flocks and the fields. Isn't that what we rejoice in? But what if we don't have those things? The question is, can we still rejoice in the Lord? Do we have the spirit of Habakkuk that we can still rejoice in God? And we were talking between services a while ago, you know, about, you know, well, talk is cheap, isn't it? A lot of these things are, oh, they're so much easier said than ever done. This is salvation, not what most think is salvation, but this is salvation to rejoice in the Lord, though everything else be taken away. Well, That couldn't happen to this country, could it? Not to me, especially. Because I'm such a special person to God. But no, you see, we still are sheep for the Sovereign. But the good part of it is, we are more than conquerors through Jesus Christ. But folks, the very idea of conquest involves warfare. And warfare is never pretty. So Habakkuk has a burden. Do you have a burden? I hope you do. I hope I do. I hope we are jealous for the glory of God. But folks, if we are, we better get prepared. You know, it's amazing. Do you remember a fellow by the name of Jonathan Edwards? What was the most famous sermon that Jonathan Edwards ever preached? Well, who did he preach it to? And what was the gist of that message? Because God will judge, what was he saying? Prepare to meet thy God. You're not going to turn. Prepare to meet thy God. You know what? It's going to be one sad day when all of these folks that are going around, for instance, referring to God as that man upstairs, some of the other things. The way that they think about God is that he's just a benevolent old grandfather. Yeah, taking his name in vain every time they turn around. No reverence. There's no fear of God before their eyes. It's going to be a one sad day when they find out who they've been dealing with all this time. Lo, I will raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Now, why is that so bad? Do you remember when David numbered Israel? You know what God sent the prophet to Nathan, David, and he gave David how many choices?
Three.
Two of them had to do with falling into the hands of who? Man. One of them had to do with falling into the hands of God. You know which one he chose? To let me fall into the hands of the Lord. Why? David, what in the world do you want to fall in the hands of God? Why not into the hands of man? Yeah, because man has no mercy. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than the leopards, and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from far, and they shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. Nothing's going to stop them. They shall come all for what? Violence. That's all that's in their mind and in their heart. No mercy. No compassion. It's just for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand, and they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall be scorned unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, or they shall heap dust and take it. You know what's one of the scariest things in these days? All these people that are running around saying, we're the strongest nation on the earth. And the implication is, nobody can touch us. But it seems to me like that I remember God telling Jeremiah concerning these same Chaldeans that something to the effect, was it, that even if they had broken legs, they would still rise up and destroy the nation of Israel. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing this his power unto his God. You see, there is religion involved in it, isn't there? Have you ever heard of the God of this world? All right. Well, I guess we better stop right there. We'll just mention briefly again Habakkuk's burden. God answers him in a way that I'm sure that he wasn't quite expecting. But here's what it did to Habakkuk. It sobered him. And that's what it better be doing to us. It better be sobering us. We better be considering God and who He is and looking unto Him for our salvation. Art thou not from everlasting? Now we're coming down to earth, aren't we? Habakkuk has got the answer to his burden. But now he's kind of changing his tune. He is considering. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. But thou hast ordained them for judgment. Thou hast established them for correction. We'll try to pick up there next Lord's Day if the Lord be willing. Lot to learn from Habakkuk's burden and Habakkuk's experience.